The book of Luke on Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock. And Luke chapter 2 is still about the birth of Jesus Christ and the ceremonial entrance into the world here. And there's a few folks mentioned in Luke 2 that are around at the time of the birth of Jesus Christ that were physically in that area, and the shepherds are around there and they see Jesus Christ. And then a man named Simeon is mentioned. He quite a devoted man. And now Anna occupies about three or four verses here in this chapter, starting in verse 36. But I'll say I think I understand why the Bible is boring to a lot of people and doesn't make sense, because many things that are said have a context in a culture that you may not be real familiar with. And that's not an excuse. It's not an excuse to just, okay, well, I don't understand it, so, you know, we'll just do away with it. It's not an excuse. It's your job and it's my job to get excited about the Bible. It's our jobs to do that. God gives you his words and you're responsible to love the words of God or be occupied with something else. But I understand some of the context and some of the things said, and particularly in the verses we're going to read, because there are some details mentioned about Anna that, if in a casual reading of these verses, they don't mean a whole lot. They just, you just have to understand a little bit about Israelite culture and the way that things are said. And I hate to say some of these things just because you don't have to be necessarily a scholar, so to say, to figure this out. Anyone can read the Bible and learn these things. That's how I learned, but that said, it's our job to be interested in the things that God writes down. And so he just won't do that for you, but I do understand the predicament people find themselves in sometimes when trying to read without any context of understanding. And the verses we're looking at today are such verses. They're things pointed out that outside of the Hebrew culture, the details don't really mean a whole lot. But when you put them in their place and you understand what's being said and why it's being said, there's some really valuable, good lessons in here. And let's look at Luke chapter 2, verse 36 to start. And this is the account of Anna. She's called a prophetess. And she was married. Looks like she was married as a younger lady. And then her husband died, so she was a widow for years and years, and decided not to remarry and to just make her life about temple business. Just prayer and fasting and going to the temple and occupying her life that way. So Luke chapter 2, let's read. Verse 36 says, "And there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of great age, had lived with a husband 7 years from her virginity, and she was a widow of about 84 years old." That's 84 years. "Which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day." So that's how she served God. "And she, coming in that instant, gave thanks likewise unto the Lord, and spake of him to all that looked for redemption in Jerusalem." A couple of things that are mentioned that need the context that I mentioned before here. This is Jesus Christ is 8 days old at this point. He's in the temple. They're going to do the circumcision and name Jesus Christ, and so they do. Simeon's there, and Anna is mentioned by name. These two people are mentioned by name. And in the chronology of Israel's history, For 400 years, there hasn't been a prophet. You got the end of the Old Testament, and after Malachi, it's kind of just silence, it seems like. There hasn't been any prophet that has arisen on the scene like anybody like Isaiah or Ezekiel or Jeremiah or any men like that. So for 400 years, Israel has been going off of and using scriptures that are at this point, they're 400 years old at the minimum. And the first person that has a speaking part, I should say it this way, the first person that is called a prophet around Jesus Christ's birth is actually not a prophet, it's a prophetess. It's a lady. And so I understand John the Baptist is called a prophet of the Most High God, but he's only 6 months old at this time. Like I said, the first person that has a speaking role to preach redemption is interesting because it's mentioned that Anna is a prophetess. And this is the first time anyone with that title has showed up in 400 years. And so that's something to take note of. She's the first prophet, and she actually is a prophetess because she's just a lady. And so that said, there's no exclusion of women being able to speak under inspiration in the Bible. In fact, that's preferable to speaking rumors and gossip and stuff like that. It's preferable to speak under inspiration. Peter would say, "Let every man speak as the oracles of God." And so when you talk about prophecy and prophets, that it's not voodoo, it's not weirdness, and it's not even general future events necessarily. Prophecy has a very narrow meaning in the Bible. What it means is, in Revelation, John said it this way, the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. That's the narrow meaning of prophecy. The testimony of Jesus. And men and women can speak about Jesus. They're fully capable of speaking about Jesus Christ. And it's clear at the end of her little account here that's mentioned by Luke, that's what she does. She ends up preaching Jesus to anyone who's looking for redemption in Jerusalem. So there are several people in the Bible, I think of these books before I talk about the people in the Bible who are called prophetesses. There are people like Deborah and Isaiah's wife, and Miriam's called a prophetess in the Exodus. But I think of the way prophecy is used. It's interesting. You hear about books, and it's like things like America in Prophecy or something like that. Well, prophecy is not about America. Prophecy is about Jesus Christ. And when someone talks about the end of the world, for instance, and prophecy, as they read Revelation, the end of the world and stuff like that, the only reason the end of the world is the end of the world is because it's the time when Jesus Christ returns. That's what makes it the end of the world. It's not the end of the world because the nations have done whatever they're going to do, and the economic system has turned to digitized and all that stuff. What makes the end of the world is the return of Jesus Christ. That's why it's prophetic, because it's the testimony of Jesus Christ. And so Revelation, you know the full title of Revelation? It's the Revelation of Jesus Christ. That's the title of that book. That everybody, you know, I got to find America in here. I got to find what's going to happen with Congress and how's the currency going to look and stuff like that. I mean, and some of those things, they can show up in these events, but none of these things are the focal point of prophecy. Prophecy is very narrowly defined as the testimony of Jesus Christ. That's what it is. And so when someone says Anna is a prophetess, it's nothing to get scared of. This is someone who preached Jesus Christ. And so that's one thing to think about. And it's interesting in the chronology of Israel's history that the first person who is called by the title prophet in any way and speaks about anything regarding Jesus Christ and is called a prophet is actually a prophetess. It's Anna. So that said, Anna's the prophetess. And the inspiration, like I said, it shouldn't be unique with Anna. I mean, if any man, like Peter said, if any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God, that's an instruction for a Christian. Speak as the oracles of God, as though God were speaking. Speak that way. And it just makes me think as an application. And this is what we'll do with Anna's life here in the three verses that we have her mentioned in. We'll try to make some application with her life. And try to measure some of the things that we do with her life, because her life is instructive. It's something that God thought important enough to include so that you and I could read about it and learn from it. So this is what comes out of her mouth. She is her ministry, for it looks like decades now, has been prayer and fasting, and that's been her ministry. She goes to the temple, she prays and fasts. What's she doing? She's looking for the hope of Israel, like Simeon. She's looking for redemption. She's looking for the salvation of God. So she occupies her time with prayer and fasting, and she speaks on the things that regard God's salvation, God's redemption. She doesn't know who that person is, but now she does know who that person is. Now she knows who the person is that's going to bring salvation and redemption. And so she uses her mouth to speak these things, to say these things. And I just think, you know, as an application, what is it that comes out of her mouth? It's a good thing that God thought it's so good. It's good enough to write down, name her in the Bible, and let you and I read about her 2,000 years later. But it's instructive in that it makes me think, well, what comes out of my mouth? What comes out of your mouth? What are the things that occupy our time? And really, the things that come out of your mouth are things that fill your heart. They're the things that bubble over out of your heart. It's whatever is abundant in your heart. Some of you may say something like this. You know, you say, I don't know enough to speak on biblical matters. And I don't know. Let's be honest about that, though. It's not that you don't know enough. I mean, that may be the result of something, but it's the result of I don't want to be hypercritical, but I am going to say, not knowing about something is the result of not caring enough about something to know about it. Because you will know what you want to know. You will learn what you want to learn. You talk to folks and they you've talked to people who you know who say I'm not good at this. I can't learn. I can't do this. I'm not capable of retaining information. And then you find out, well, you are capable of retaining information about things you care about. You can tell me about your guns. You can tell me about your hunting experiences. You do know about that. So it's not that you just don't know. It's deeper than that. It's that I just didn't want to spend the time to know. I'm not that interested in the things of God. And that's our responsibility. But I say at the beginning, like I introduced this thing, I understand the predicament. Some things you read in the Bible are kind of difficult. They require context. But you're capable of learning that context. What is it that comes out of your mouth? Anna's a prophetess. You know what? You know why Anna is a prophetess? Not because she was born a prophetess. Not because God just made her into this person as a baby. She's a prophetess because she occupies her time with the things of God. That's how she spends her time. She's a prophetess because her heart desires the glory of God. She wasn't born a prophetess. She became one because she cared about the things of God. So it's instructive in that way. There's something to learn here. We are all, I was listening to this, listening to this fellow talk about, he's a, he's a clinical psychologist, all that, and y'all can, you know, have to throw them all out the window and all that stuff. Well, you might like what he had to say, so I'm going to tell you. So he said, you know, you find in these situations, in these cases, where people are distracted. And that's a big thing now, you know, just overstimulation and being distracted, and I can't pay attention. But you do find in cases where people say they may be distracted, those people are still capable of learning things they want to learn. They're still capable of knowing what they want to know. Meaning they're willing to set aside, as hard as it may be, something to occupy their time with a video game. They can do that. It can be done. And so what you find out is, okay, well, maybe these things are just more about where the heart drifts to. It's not necessarily about a biological, I mean, maybe there's some things in there that are chemistry and stuff like that. But a big component of it is, where does the heart go? What does the heart want? And what the heart wants, that's the abundance. That's something that's in there. That's something you'll talk about. That's something you'll learn about. Anna, she is a faithful servant to God. She's a prophetess. And I thought it was kind of neat that she's the first one that occupies this title with the speaking role in 400 years of Israel's history here. Anna the prophetess. Second thing. This one I understand you need a little context to. But in verse 36, it says she's a prophetess. She's the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. This, like I said, there's many things in the Bible that a Jewish person would probably understand much better than an outsider like you and I. But she is the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. What's the point of any of that? Is it it's just to identify where her lineage comes from? Yep, it is. It does that. And it may not matter to you, but it matters to the Lord, and it matters to someone who knows better. Here's what makes this significant. Two things make this significant. First of all, Asher, historically, Asher is a tribe in the north. You know, Israel was divided into north and south. There was two southern tribes, Benjamin and Judah. And then there was 10 northern tribes, all the 10. Asher and Gad and all that. And so Asher's in the north. Just take a guess here. Does anyone know where Jerusalem is located? Which is it, north or south? Anyone remember? I heard it. It's south. It's south. So pointing out that this lady is from the north, but she's living in Jerusalem, says something about her priorities. Apparently she moved, or somebody moved to Jerusalem just to serve the Lord. She doesn't occupy the inheritance of her forefathers. She doesn't live in the place that Asher inherited. That would be in the north side. So the point is, here is this person living in Jerusalem who has picked up, maybe it was her, maybe it was her and her husband, at some point in time, her family or her, they moved to Jerusalem for the purpose of religious service. That's what they did. And so the Lord points out, oh, by the way, Anna, she's in Jerusalem serving in the temple, but she's not from around here. She's from up there north. And for some reason, she's living around Jerusalem. Well, you know what the reason is, because this is how she's serving God. She's the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. That's the first significance. Asher is, interestingly enough, the inheritance of Asher is, part of that region is called Galilee. You know, there's a Sea of Galilee, and then there's land called that Galilee region. Asher is part of that Galilee region. And so it's considered by Jewish leadership in Jerusalem as just some unclean place. It's like Samaria. It's where the nations mixed and things like that. And so, interestingly enough, she is from this region called Galilee. And the leadership in Jerusalem would ignorantly say this in John. They would say, there's no prophet that comes from Galilee. He said, search the scripture. There's no prophet that comes from Galilee. Well, Jonah came from Galilee. Jonah was a prophet from Galilee. You know who's going to be another prophet from Galilee? Jesus Christ is a prophet from Galilee. I mean, he's more than a prophet, but he comes from Galilee. And then the first person that's called a prophet in the New Testament is from Galilee. Isn't that wild? And then all, well, not all of them, but most of the apostles come from Galilee. Fishermen, Galilee, live around Nazareth. That's where they come from. So this whole setup, in just a few words, we might read that and say, well, I don't know what that means. Phanuel, I don't know who Phanuel is. I don't know who Asher is. But a little bit of context says it says a lot about this lady. And it says a lot about probably what the leadership in Jerusalem thinks about her. She's from Galilee, a prophetess, northern part. Why is she living in Jerusalem? Well, she's living in Jerusalem for the very specific purpose of serving God. That's the reason she's here. She moves to Jerusalem, or somebody moved her to Jerusalem, but she stayed there for the purpose of serving God, particularly waiting for the Messiah. Now, here's a question. If the Lord decided that your service to God was required somewhere else, what if that was the case? What if the Lord required your service to God to be somewhere else? I mean, it wasn't very far of a move, I get it. But a few years ago, we packed up and moved to Beeville. Not because the oil field was better here, although I was in the oil field. Not because the jobs were better here. For the specific purpose there's a spiritual reason behind it. That's the only reason. That's the only reason the geography changed in our family. This is like Anna. The only reason she lives in Jerusalem is for spiritual purposes. So it's a big decision. I really respect missionaries. I mean, to pack up and missionaries that do it right, to pack up and live in another country and serve God for that specific purpose. You know, we're going to Zambia for the purpose of serving God. That's why we're going to go there. We're not going there because it's a better economy. We're not going there because we're going to have better retirement there. We're going there because that's the our occupation is serving God. I used to think about it this way. When I was a teenager, our family moved to South America. And we lived in Quito, Ecuador, just for a year. We lived there for a year. I was in high school. It was a good experience. But I always thought this, when I consider missions and mission work, I thought, you know, we did that for money. Not that it was bad, it was just occupation, it's just work. That was where my dad was moved. And so we moved there for that purpose. There was no spiritual necessarily reason behind it. I learned a lot spiritually. I mean, that whole process and living in another country and stuff like that. But I thought, you know, if a family could do that for money, surely somebody could do that for God. You know what I mean? I mean, people travel all over the world for money now. Surely somebody would be willing to serve God if God said, I want you to serve me over here. Okay, Lord, wherever you want me, that's where I'll be. So here's Anna, living in Jerusalem, a widow, not married. And she's not married probably because she wants to occupy her time serving God. What is it? What is it would you be willing to move just for the sake of staying close to the Lord? Would you be willing to do that? I noticed Jesus saying this oftentimes in his ministry. He would tell people, follow me. You know what that means? Pack up your stuff and go where I'm going. And sometimes the excuse is, well, I got to take care and figure out the family situation or whatever it is. I got to do this first. The Lord said, okay, well, then you can't follow me. And we like to play the middle ground, like, well, don't be so harsh, Lord. I mean, he's got to take care of this other stuff. And the Lord's just dealing with reality. It's like, well, if you have to take care of other stuff, you can't follow me. That's just what it is. Because I'm going over here, and if you have other things you're going to do, you can't go where I'm going. Well, don't be so harsh, Lord. Well, I'm not staying here. I'm moving over here. I'm going over here. And if you want to follow me, you're welcome to follow me. It will mean you'll have to make some decisions about your geography and your relationships and things over here. But whatever keeps you where you are, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter what it is. Whatever it is, I'm going over here. And if you can't go over here for whatever reason, the fact is, you can't follow me where I'm going. Some guys that Jesus invited had some reasons that you and I would probably say that's a good reason. He needs to take care of this business. Jesus is ministering. He's got 3.5 years. He's going to minister. And he says, follow me. And the man says, or somebody says, well, I got to do this first. And somebody else says, I got to do this first. And somebody else says, I got to do this first. And essentially, It all kind of comes out in the wash. Like, well, whatever you have to do, if you can't follow me, then you just can't follow me. Don't pretend like you're going to follow me and continue doing whatever it is you're doing. Because following me looks like following me. It's not the idea of following me. It's following me. So Anna is her geography, her physical place in this, on this earth, is determined upon her relationship to God Almighty. She lives in Jerusalem. Here's her ministry. Number three, here's her ministry. This is what she does. The Bible says, verse 37, Luke chapter 2, she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but serve God with fastings and prayers night and day. So she loves the Lord's house. It's interesting. The Lord's house is called, at least that temple, that standing temple, is called the Lord's house. And Jesus one time said, you made my Father's house a den of thieves. What was it supposed to be? It's supposed to be a house of prayer. That was the administration of this thing. It's supposed to be a house of prayer. Well, Anna understands that. She is devoted to the temple of the Lord, and her ministry is prayer and fasting. So she chooses to be a keeper of the Lord's house. She was there because it's God's house. She attended to the things of the Lord because they belong to the Lord. Why is that important? I guarantee you Anna understood that some of the leadership in Jerusalem was bad. But did that change how she served the Lord? No, it didn't change how she served the Lord. It could have. She could have said, well, all these Pharisees, they don't know what they're talking about. I don't like doing this, so I don't want to serve the Lord. I don't want to do it this way because all these people are bad around me. She could have said that. I guarantee you Anna understood that some of the administration in the temple was corrupt. Did that change what Anna did? No, it didn't change what Anna did. She still goes to the temple. She's praying. She's fasting. And her relationship, her devotion to the Lord is not based on this person's devotion to the Lord or this person's corruption. It's her. And so she gives herself to this keeping of the temple, taking care of it, making it a house of prayer, just like it's supposed to be. She knew the Old Testament scriptures. She knew the religious leadership in Israel's apostate. I'm sure she knew all this stuff. She knew the Pharisees were a bunch of hypocrites, I'm sure. You can't spend that much time there and not know these things are happening. She knew that. Did it deter her from what she did? Apparently not. And so she has the unique opportunity to be around when Jesus Christ is presented at the temple and he's named Jesus, circumcised, and enter into that Abrahamic covenant, all that. And so she has the blessing of being there, regardless of what she knows about what's going on with leadership there and bad people and stuff like that. And I say that to ask this question. Anna's faithful in spite of a lot of things. So the question is, who is it? What is it? Usually it's a who. That would cause you or has caused you to be unfaithful. Meaning some of us here, you know, we did a better job of serving God years ago. But something happened. Something's happened. And now that relationship, it's just not really what it was. And the question is, who? Who is it that came between you and the Lord? What happened? What happened to cause your faithful service to God to be unfaithful? Anna, it looks like this is a statement of her age. She is 84 years old. Guaranteed, someone who's been doing this for this many decades, doing what she's doing, she has seen a lot of stuff. She's been through a lot of stuff. She's watched good people come and go. She's watched bad people come and go. None of that deterred her. She is focused, steadfast on her relationship. Her ministry is prayer and fasting. I am a keeper of God's house, no matter what other people are doing or saying or how they're acting. Why is she a keeper of God's house? Why is she there this long? Why does she, the statement, she doesn't depart from the temple? Why? Because she loves the Lord. And nothing's come between that. She loves the Lord. It's time to take care of God's house. Maybe that's the question. Maybe that's the question. When will you make God's house your priority? Anna is remembered uniquely in Scripture because she made God's priorities her priorities. That's why she's here. That's why you know who she is. That's why you know her name. Another thing. Only two more. Okay, just two more. She's a prayerful widow, which we kind of covered all that. She serves God. How does she serve God? Verse 37, with fastings and prayers, night and day. You know, it's become clearer to me, and maybe clearer to some of y'all, that as time goes on, you can't physically do what you could used to physically do. And sometimes as age sets in, I'm not minimizing prayer. Prayer is necessary. But prayer is a ministry in itself. That is a ministry. Maybe as we get older, that becomes more of the ministry. Because physically we can't do all the things we could do. We can pray. I mean, I think about it. I went to this emergency operation, get my gallbladder taken out, laying in a hospital bed. And it wasn't very long, but I was there long enough. And you realize, and you just think about it, I mean, knew it beforehand, but now I'm experiencing the helplessness of a frail body. This is just where you are. Well, I can't physically do a whole lot from the hospital bed, but I can pray for people. I can read my Bible. I can pray. I can fast for people. And that is a, in fact, Paul says it this